Welcome to a podcast of a sermon delivered at the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood in New Jersey. Our congregation is a place where you will find inspiration in the richness of diverse beliefs and the power of community. Detailed information about the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood is available on our website, uuridgewood.org.
Now, before we get serious, I want to remind you that with Passover beginning this week, we are now in that small window of opportunity where you can get Ubet's chocolate syrup kosher for Passover when it's made with actual sugar rather than corn syrup. And some people, including my wife, claimed that you can't make a real egg cream without kosher Ubet's chocolate syrup. I did not grow up on egg creams on the Upper West Side like she did, so I don't know. But this is the season that includes Passover and Easter. And it seems to me a fit time for reflection on the struggle for survival and freedom. From the stories of the Hebrew and Christian scriptures to the present day. The story of slavery in Egypt, the Exodus, the arrival in Canaan, the promised land, the establishment of the kingdom, you know, with the king anointed by Samuel over his good judgment, then the split into two kingdoms. You know, there's a whole big, long history there. The destruction of the temple, the Babylonian exile. And then with the arrival of Jesus, the life and ministry of Jesus, the crucifixion, the stories of resurrection, and then carry it forward to the history of slavery in this country. The escapes along the Underground Railroad, the Civil War, the end of slavery, and that spiritual being a song that applied the narrative of the Exodus to the struggle for freedom. The end of slavery, Jim Crow, the civil rights movement, the new Jim Crow, to Black Lives Matter. And as Patrice Cullors, one of the people credited with founding Black Lives Matter, though she denies that they founded it, that they were just taking a particular action within a long history of struggle for liberation, and they stood on the shoulders of a lot of people who had done very hard work before, and people would follow them. And although they would not use the language, what I'm talking about today is staying strong between the Exodus and what I'm metaphorically calling Easter, the achievement of liberation, a life of justice, a world of justice. So the biblical story of the Exodus is the story behind Passover in Judaism. And it serves as the reason for many of the admonitions in the next book of the Bible, next couple of books of the Bible, Deuteronomy and Leviticus, where instructions on how to carry out the festivals are there, and also such things as the one I mentioned a week ago: you must welcome the stranger as a citizen, for you were once strangers in a land, referring, of course, to the period of slavery in Egypt, and then having to take over the land that was promised. And you were once slaves, so treat the slaves well. It is also the message of and model for deliverance from slavery in the United States, this story. Hence the popularity of gospel tunes such as Go Down Moses, which we sang this morning. And hence the description of Harriet Tubman, the escaped slave who led hundreds of other slaves along the Underground Railroad to their escape and freedom, as our Moses, consciously applying that story to a story millennia later of escape from slavery. And it continues to be a moving metaphor to this day. Hence the power of retelling the story in the Passover Seder and in Christian churches and in the ongoing struggle for justice. Dr. King referred to it in much of his preaching, in his active ministry. So the Passover Seder, which many of you will attend this week, even if you're not Jewish, is a celebration of a spring feast ordered by God in the book of Exodus. Its origin in the passing over of the plague of the death of the firstborn in the houses of the Hebrew people, while the plague led to the deaths of the firstborn of the people of Egypt. And at the Seder, the Passover, the Exodus story is told, but there's also mention of the absence of the prophet Elijah, who is expected, and also mention of the Babylonian exile in the 6th century before the Common Era. And many of the customs of Passover are not found anywhere in the Bible, but in commentaries and recountings of things that were done and practiced, much of it from the period following the destruction of the Second Temple about the year 70 of the Common Era. Displacement and exile at the heart of the Seder, even 7 decades after the establishment of the modern nation of Israel. Now, the Christian narrative eventually leads to Easter, the validation of Jesus as Messiah, as Savior. Except in some small messianic Jewish groups, and they tend to be very tiny, Judaism does not make use of the story of Easter or acknowledge Yeshua as a Messiah. Nor does Islam accept Jesus as a Messiah, though he is considered the next to last prophet before Muhammad. And in case you haven't noticed, and there's no reason why you should have, there are these little bits about the Virgin Mary in the Christian scriptures. There's a lot more in the Quran. And many mentions of Jesus and Jesus' teachings. Now, Easter, as a point of fact of historical development, was at some point connected to pre-Christian spring festivals and possibly to a goddess named Easter, or Esther, O-E-S-T-E-R, not Esther like in the Bible, which in English is E-S-T-H-E-R. And like all spring festivals, it has elements of rebirth of nature, as exemplified by the profusion of plants as gifts and of recognition of animal life. Many of the customs of Easter, such as eggs, flowers, and bunnies, for example, have more to do with these spring festivals than the Christian story of Jesus' resurrection. Now, even Unitarians who came out of Protestant Christianity doubted the divinity of Jesus and even in many cases his resurrection. There are many Unitarians who believe that Jesus is not God, but God could still intervene and create miracles like raising someone from the dead. That was a major dividing point in early Unitarianism. The Reverend Theodore Parker, who lived from 1810 to 1850, not only doubted the resurrection and thoroughly denied that Jesus was divine, he made 2 remarkable statements. One, that Jesus was the greatest religious teacher of all time, but that Jesus was still wrong about some things, and Parker was happy to list those. And second, that martyrdom was common in the ancient times, and therefore the manner of Jesus' death was not that remarkable, not nearly important as the example of his life and his teachings. In fact, Parker was such a thoroughgoing demythologizer that other Unitarians who described themselves as Christians, who did not believe in the divinity of Jesus and doubted the resurrection, didn't think he qualified as a Unitarian Christian, just something else out there. But as good followers of congregational polity, they said, if his congregation is satisfied, he's a minister. Though many of them wouldn't exchange pulpits with him. And Parker, in an Easter sermon, said something remarkable to his congregation. He talked about Jesus and Jesus' goodness and the power of his teachings and the example of his life, and then said, may you be that goodness yourselves. Jesus was the example of how to live. The stories of resurrection were stories, in Parker's accounting, of the possibilities of human goodness, of ways of acknowledging the greatness of a teacher by saying even more about him and saying he still lived with us. In other words, you can have your own Easter. You can be that goodness. And that was carrying Unitarian Christianity to its extreme. Now, some of you in your own lives can attest to what we might call Easter moments. You may recall on Easter Sunday last year, I talked about more resurrections than I could count, and talked about moments of transformation in people's lives that took them from fear and despair to hope and possibility. But a collective Easter is not the miraculous story in the Christian Gospels. And that is how I'm talking about it today. A collective Easter that is not a miraculous story, but a goal, a story or a goal of personal and social transformation, transformation of the world and the transition to what we call the beloved community. Our ancestors may have lived through the Exodus. The slaves and their descendants have lived through a modern Exodus, but they still not have arrived at the modern promised land, and many live in what the MSNBC reporter Chris Hayes has called a colony within a nation. So the power of the Exodus narrative in Black Christianity is its assurance of ultimate justice. Not necessarily immediate justice, but ultimate justice. The retelling of the story and the placing of present sufferings and injustices in the context of the story is one manner of staying strong from Exodus to Easter. The telling of the story does not achieve liberation, it encourages liberation, and the work of liberation is not complete. The continued struggle for liberation is the continuation of the narrative. And if you look at the narrative in relation to slavery and to Jim Crow and to the civil rights movement, it is an ongoing narrative today. And indeed, all of us struggle to retain the successes of the past two generations, not only in relation to Black civil rights, but also in advances in the rights of LGBTQ people, women, Native Americans, immigrants, Latinos, Latinas, and other marginalized peoples. And within Judaism, many seders now have an orange along with the lamb bone and the spices to represent Miriam, the sister of Moses and a prophet in her own right, and to a figure of the female power in the story of liberation, and also to emphasize the need of liberating justice for women in the modern world. Now, I would suggest that none of us have made it from Exodus to Easter in terms of a collective liberation. Not even the most privileged of us have reached a world of justice that is a beloved community. I would argue that this is true for even those who believe in the resurrection of Jesus and a personal salvation resulting from that. And the events of recent years have made it clear that for the African American community, there is more struggle. After the advances of the civil rights movement, as I mentioned, there's now the new Jim Crow, as Michelle Alexander calls it, the criminalization of imprisonment of large numbers of black males, and the ongoing unjustified police violence against people of color, and structural injustice in relation to poverty and health care, and among other issues that resulted in the identification of the Black Lives Matter movement. And that continues to be an important part of the narrative. So however we read and interpret ancient and modern texts and traditions, none of us have reached the promised land. The broken world has not been transformed into the beloved community. We have not experienced Easter as a social and moral transformation collectively, in spite of our many years of wandering around the wilderness. Almost everywhere I go, in fact, persons of color and white people see the Black Lives Matter button I have and tell me how much they like it. Now, I buy these 10 or 20 at a time and give them away now. Most recently, I was making my first purchase at the new Whole Foods Market on Broad Street in Newark, conveniently located across from the YMCA where I work out. The young African-American woman who rang up my first purchase, which was a single item package of seitan, told me how much she liked the button. And I said, well, here, I have more in my backpack. And she immediately pinned it on her Whole Foods apron and said, I'm going to wear this all the time now. A few weeks earlier, I was celebrating my birthday at Hat City Kitchen in Orange, and during one of the breaks, one of the musicians was sitting at the table next to where Jody and I were eating dinner. And we started talking, and he looked at the button and said how much he liked it. And I said, would you like it? I have more. And he said, yes. I gave him one. I gave one to a white employee who was in that conversation. They both immediately pinned them on their vests that they were wearing. And I told them with a little pride in this society that it was the only congregation in the village of Ridgewood that had a Black Lives Matter banner on its building. I mentioned there was also some discussion about how long it would need to hang. Now, I express my opinion that all these banners need to be up until we dismantle structural racism. The musician said, well, that's probably another 400 years. And I said, you're probably right, but I hope we can do better. Well, staying strong is essential to the struggle against racism in American society. And as the Reverend Charles Franklin Boyer stated in this room yesterday in his address to the plenary of the Unitarian Universalist Legislative Ministry of New Jersey, we Unitarian Universalists are strong actors in these struggles and struggles against the elements of struggle racism that our legislative ministry and Reverend Boyer's groups work on, such things as mass incarceration, i.e. the new Jim Crow, education and criminal justice, and women's reproductive rights among them. We are good at staying strong for the struggle in society at large. However, there is currently an uproar within our denomination about the appointment of senior staff in the Unitarian Universalist Association. A few of you may have been able to miss that news. But when the three top executives of the denomination resign over a span of 10 days, it's been in the Washington Post and other places as well. What happened was this. Oh, well, the good news is this. It's not a sex scandal. It's worse. It's not money. It's worse. There was an open position for one of the five regional leads, which, you know, we have five regions in the United States in the UU organization. And the two finalists for the position included a woman of color who was a director of religious education and a member of our National Board of Trustees, and a white male who was a parish minister and a member of our National Board of Trustees. And they were all obviously both considered qualified because they became the finalists. Well, the woman was told that she was not chosen for the job by phone while attending the recent Lives of Black Unitarian Universalist gathering in New Orleans. The reason given was that it wasn't the right fit, which is often a coded way of telling a woman or person of color that they are not wanted with no specific reason needed. The region to which she applied has absolutely no people of color on staff. And to add insult to injury, the person who was chosen announced that he would stay at his home in another part of the country and work from there, not even move to the region. Well, as you can imagine, and as this was discussed at that gathering, people were upset. And the person who did not get the job was not the one who drove the upset. One of the leaders was Aisha Hauser, Director of Religious Education, East Shore Unitarian Church in Bellevue, Washington, a member of the UUA Nominating Committee and a former member of this society. She was among the first to publicly criticize the hiring decision and call it out as white supremacy. Numerous white ministers signed a letter of support, and a half dozen ministers of color sent their own letter to the UUA board and president. The president of the UUA, the Reverend Peter Morales, responded with a letter that accused people raising the issue of self-righteous hysteria. In his letter, he also stated that DREs don't have the administrative experience that ministers do. That only inflamed people more. And I can tell you as a fact that the generalization about administrative experience has no basis in reality. There are ministers who are good administrators and ministers who are terrible administrators. There are DREs who are good administrators and there are DREs who are terrible administrators. It's not defined by the job title. You can't generalize it from that. And ever since we've had accredited directors of religious education, some of us who are parish ministers have looked at the requirements and wondered how we could pass them. Well, a white female minister about my age said to me, well, that's how they taught to me when I was a young and one of the few female ministers in the denomination, when I raised issues about women's access to good positions either in the denomination or congregations. Well, a few days later, Reverend Morales resigned as president. And with a few more days, vice president and chief operating officer, the Reverend Harlan Limpert, resigned. And the director of congregational services, who had approved the hire, the Reverend Scott Taylor. Well, this series of events has made it clear that although we have important work to do in the world, we have work to do on ourselves. As a liberal religious movement, as an association of freely gathered religious communities that would be free spaces in a repressive world and would be builders of the beloved community. The UUA Board of Trustees has begun to address the issue. It has agreed to a thorough review of hiring practices and named a former minister of this society, the Reverend Sarah Lammert, to serve as interim chief operating officer. She, in turn, has appointed an African-American woman and religious educator, the Reverend Jessica York, to be the interim director of ministry, the position she currently holds. Well, what we are expecting now is a shakeup of the structural racism that we've inherited from our history as a white Protestant denomination. And we can anticipate addressing how that structural racism can lead to white supremacy, i.e., in this case, the apparent impossibility for people of color to move into high staff level positions. Now, this uproar is not a problem. It is an opportunity. It is an opportunity to align our internal practices more closely with our stated principles. The Lives of Black Unitarian Universalist Organization has asked member societies of the Unitarian Universalist Association to have a teach-in on white supremacy during Sunday service time, either on April 30th or May 7th. And this has been endorsed by the Board of Trustees, the UUA, the Unitarian Universalist Ministers Association and the Liberal Religious Educators Association. Since you'll be hearing a candidate on April 30th, we will be doing this on May 7th. And the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood is among at least 240 societies already signed up to do so. That's almost a quarter of our congregations in the United States. While the internal work does not mean we forget about the issues in the larger world, we still face up to the retrenchments of the Justice Department on voting rights and supervision of police departments with civil rights complaints, with the seating of Judge Gorsuch as a Justice of the United States Supreme Court, the assaults on Planned Parenthood and GLBTQ rights, and other steps backward. There is indeed much work for freely gathered religious communities such as this to do within its walls and beyond its walls, in interfaith coalition through our statewide legislative ministry and in other coalitions. The work on white supremacy internally and in society at large demands a commitment to continue support of Black Lives Matter and also to support the internal work of Unitarian Universalism to bring it closer to our own standards and thus to our own denominational Easter. A great opportunity is at hand. As one of my colleagues said, shaking up the system is good for the system. It's not blaming the people who made the system work the way it does. So a great opportunity is at hand to shake up the system. So the work goes on internally and externally. We are slowly building the beloved community bit by bit in spite of recent setbacks. Easter, understood as moral and social transformation, is a long way off, but we can take steps toward making it real. The Exodus continues, but it continues forward. Stay strong.